5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Last Tech Podcast. I have with me today a hero, a superstar, an amazing person, and someone that I'm so excited to speak to today. She's a keynote speaker and a developer advocate at Auth0 by Okta. I want to welcome Ciara Ford. Thank you so much for being here, Ciara.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited.
It's a long time coming. You're like one of my first guests, so I don't know if that's true, but a long time coming that we get to talk to each other in this sort of format. I know we've talked a few times over the years. So you are a killer in all things DevRel. Tell me how you got your start in that world. Give me the full rundown.
Yeah. So I don't know if I feel like I'm just now starting to get my footing with DevRel. Like, I feel like when I first got started, I was kind of like trying to figure out what I wanted my voice to be like and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like I finally have that down pat now. Nice. But I got started in DevRel. I feel like I really got started in DevRel when I was getting into the tech industry, because a lot of what I was doing was learning in public, which happens to be a big part of most DevRel jobs. So I was doing a lot of writing. I was on podcasts. I was doing a lot of like virtual conferences and things like that. And the goal was to get myself out there so that it would be easier for me to find my first job. It just so happened that while I was doing all that, I really enjoyed all that stuff. So I really liked the idea of being able to write and live stream and all that kind of stuff. And so I had my first couple like jobs in the tech industry were okay. Like, I learned a lot, but they weren't the best fit for me growth wise. And so I found myself in a position where I was looking for a new job, and someone was like, hey, we have this role at a company called Apollo GraphQL, which you're very familiar with. And it was a developer advocate role. And I was like, I should give this a try. So I did. And I really liked it. At that time, like I said, I was still kind of finding my footing with DevRel and everything. I didn't know, but I was also experiencing depression at the time. So that also affected my ability to like show up at work. And so then a lot of things changed internally at the company. And I found myself again in a position where it was like, I've grown a lot here, but it's time for me to move on to my next role. So my next role was Auth0 by Okta. The crazy thing is that when I had taken like 3 months in between my job. So Apollo GraphQL and Auth0, there were like 3 months there where I was just kind of like giving myself a chance to kind of refresh myself. What ended up happening was I didn't realize I was like experiencing depression this whole time. And then I start my job at Auth0 and the depression gets considerably worse like during my first like few months there, to the point where I had to take like medical leave and I was like taking a break from socials and all this kind of stuff. And then when I finally came back January 2023, so that was just over a year ago, and I started to feel like myself again. I started to feel like I could actually do my job well. And now, like a year later, I'm starting to feel like, okay, I actually really know what I'm doing now. So that all that to say that I feel like I'm just now figuring out like what's going on, what I like to do, how to like execute DevRel well, how to, you know, there's a lot of debate in the DevRel world about how to kind of converge your community goals with your company's business goals. And I feel like I kind of have a good vision for that now. So yeah, I'm just now starting to know how to do this job. Yeah, after all of that. So that's like the long-winded way of how I got to where I am now.
That's amazing. Well, I would love to feel like I know what I'm doing at all. I respect that very much. So what do you think is the sweet spot? Like, what are the things that you're doing that feel like you're in your zone now?
So I have been trying to focus more on like product-centric work and like demo-centric work. So what I mean by that is I think sometimes in DevRel, we can start to become very like broadcasty and informative. And when I say informative, that's not a bad thing, but like it can be high level information that doesn't necessarily apply to like real world issues that developers are confronting. And so I kind of fell into the habit of doing that, of like, oh, this seems interesting to me, but like, is this really relevant to not only the community, but also to my team and our business goals? And so I feel like my sweet spot now is that I'm trying to focus more on building things. And as I build things with the product and I'm seeing problems that these, like our product features solve. And then I also have started to do a little bit of like, I like lurk.
Not what I thought you were going to say.
I do a lot of like lurking on social media to figure out like what problems are developers actually having? Because there's like, once you're not a developer anymore full time, yeah. there's like a gap between like what you know and what developers are actually experiencing on the job. And so I try to you know, how do you, yeah. decrease that gap. That's the word I'm looking for. I try to decrease that gap as much as possible. So I'm on Reddit, I'm on Twitter, I'm in Discord communities trying to see like what problems are developers actually having, and then what problems is our product solving, and how do those things converge? So that's kind of my method now. And I try to center that around like projects that for me are fun and interesting so that I actually work on them when I actually finish them. So an example of this has been like, a lot of people are very concerned with like security. A lot of people have a lot of questions around passkeys and password lists and all this kind of stuff. And these are features that Auth0 provides. And so I want to educate people on these things, but in a way that will be relevant to developers. So that means I'm building my own application where I'm implementing password lists. But instead of just building like a basic application, I try to build things that are actually fun and interesting to me so that when I give talks and when I do workshops and I give demos and things like that, it's fun for me, but also hopefully fun for the audience. And it also becomes a thing where it's like, oh, this is something that only Ciora would do. I would only get a Barbie themed talk from Ciora. You know what I mean? So this year, this is so unserious, you guys. I'm doing all this like fancy business talk, but when I actually tell you what I'm working on, you're going to be like, who is this girl?
So, I doubt it, but go on.
This year, I'm working on a Beyonce website. The Hell theme yeah. is, it's a Beyonce website, and I'm going to make it passwordless. And the whole idea is that it's going to basically be like a mock like version of something like Ticketmaster or SeatGeek or something like that, where you buy tickets, except it's like exclusively for Beyonce. The currency is fake, all that kind of stuff. But the point is, like, it's based off of my own experience with buying concert tickets to see Beyonce, when I lost my password and I'm literally standing outside the venue and trying to like log in so I can access my ticket. And if the platform I was using had passwordless, it would have been so much easier. So that's like the premise of it. I say all that to say, that's like kind of the method that I'm using now to relate to developers and also teach people more about the product that I'm like, you know, a part of, make my managers happy at the same time. And it's a balancing act, and I feel like I'm starting to figure it out. So like, we'll see. I haven't even given this talk yet. I'm giving it for the first time in like 2 weeks. So
yeah,
I'll keep you guys posted on how that actually goes. but in my head, it sounds like it's going to go okay. I hope.
Yeah. I think more than okay. I think that having a hook for a talk is so important because there's so many talks you see that are just like, user, authorized user, let's robotically communicate this stuff. And that type of approach feels like people actually remember things and
I hope
remember
so.
you know?
Yeah. And that, and I'm also hoping that people will come to the talk because
that too.
Identity security is not the shiniest subject. Like, it's not AI or something like that. You know what I mean? So if I put myself again in the developer's shoes and I'm at a conference and then someone's like, oh, identity security, blah, 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 I'm going to be like, okay, I'm not really that interested in that. But I try to make it a little bit more interesting so that like people will want to come, people will enjoy hearing about it, because I've read through the like white papers and stuff like that, and they are woo. The whole point is that we want people to like want to be learning about identity, engage with the subject, and learning about like new, you know, security features that they can implement and stuff like that. And if it's boring, are they going to want to do that? No. So I try to, you know, add a little bit of my own personality in it to make it a little bit more fun.
I love that. How many times have you seen Beyonce?
Oh, only twice. Only twice.
Okay. That's amazing. Nice.
Yes. I, for the longest, was like too broke to afford tickets. Not even going to lie. And this year that she toured was the first time that I actually had money. So I went to see her twice. I saw her here in Philly.
Yeah.
And then I also saw her in Houston because Houston is her hometown. And I knew that it was going to be a great show. So I flew out there by myself like a crazy person. And had the time of my life. Yeah.
That's aspirational. That's so cool. And
it was like, oh my gosh, so amazing. Like unforgettable.
We're going to get another tour, you think, with the new album?
I hope
new
so.
New songs?
I'm a
country festival somewhere like, in Texas.
That would be nice. The only thing is also, those tickets are not cheap.
No, not at all.
Those tickets will not be cheap. So I'm like, I got to start saving and I got to like stop eating out so much and everything.
But all worth it, I'm sure.
Yeah, it'll be worth it. Yeah. Because like, honestly, I keep telling myself this, like, when I bought those tickets, especially the ones in Houston, I was like, you are so crazy. What are you doing? Like, this is not financially responsible at all. But now, in hindsight, I don't miss the money, but I love those memories. So that's what I keep telling myself. Like, the memories matter, you know? But the money does have to be there. So I do have to start saving.
So totally.
I don't go bankrupt over Beyonce. Like, come on now. Oh, my goodness.
But she is helping you with demos for your talks and things. So maybe it's all like a work expense ultimately.
Hey,
like, can you send that to Austere at all?
If I could, if I could figure out a way to finagle that. Also, if me giving this talk and this demo somehow gets me promoted,
yeah,
I kind of owe Beyonce.
I think so. You know have to show up, I think, yeah, right?
Exactly. I got to pay it forward. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love that. That's so funny. So tell me a little more as a person who doesn't know things about passwordless auth. Tell me more.
It sounds way more like obscure than it actually is. And this is coming from someone who like for the longest was like, what are we even talking about here, you guys? Like, what's going on? Because passwordless, first of all, having passwords has been a part of our like internet infrastructure for forever.
Yeah.
So when you hear passwordless, everyone's like, what's going on? This sounds so unsafe. What do you mean? You think of passwordless, you think of someone like your grandmom's phone that doesn't have like a keypad, like, you know, the passcode to get into it and everything. So you're like, what? That sounds so not secure at all. But actually, passwordless is this. It's usually one of two things. It's like, first of all, initially, oftentimes you still have to use a password when you create an account. A lot of companies will still have you do that. A lot of websites will still have you do that. But passwordless is basically a great way to re-authenticate. So when you're re-logging in, especially when you're standing in line to see Beyonce and there are 1,000 people behind you waiting for you to move, you know what I mean?
I do.
This is like a very quick and easy and user-friendly way to authenticate yourself. So this is normally how it works. When we say passwordless, this is usually what we mean. And you've probably, once you hear me describe it, you'll be like, oh, I've done that before. So say you're trying to log in and a website will usually give you the option to use your password. Sometimes they'll give you the option to use like a third party service like Google or Twitter or Facebook to authenticate yourself. Or they will give you the option to use some sort of other form of authentication like a phone number or an email address. And when we say passwordless, that's what we mean. Phone number or email address. And usually what happens is you'll give them your phone number and they'll send you like a usually like 6 to 8 digit code and you put that in and that like tells them who you are and now you're in. You don't have to remember like all these obscure numbers and letters and capitalize this and lowercase that and underscore and all that kind of stuff. So it just makes it a lot more secure. A lot of times these passcodes will expire after a while. So again, more secure, more user-friendly. I think about the one of the reasons why I like passwordless is that because, like I said, it's so user-friendly. I spend a lot of time with like my older family members and they're the kind of people that have like the password notebooks, which I always have to say this. Those are terrible. No one should own password notebooks, okay? Because if you lose it, if someone comes in your home who you shouldn't trust and they see that password notebook, like, and a lot of times the password notebooks have it in big bold letters, passwords here, you know? Someone could have access to all of your accounts. And like My grandparents have those. I have aunts and uncles who have those. And passwordless removes the need for that because you always have that option to authenticate through your email or your phone. And most people always have their email or their phone, like access to either one of those. And so like as an example that I think about all the time, which makes me think this is a great use case, because I'm always of the mindset when it comes to teaching or even especially with products, if older people can use it or if really young people can use it, then it's a great thing. If older people can understand it, or if really young people can understand it, then you're doing a great job at teaching whatever the subject is. So my grandfather, when my grandmother passed away, he had to like handle all of his, like all of the accounts that were under her name. And so he had to re-authenticate through their phone service provider. And they did it through sending him a code through his phone number. And he was able to figure that out on his own very easily. And if he can do that, that means anyone can. Now, if he had to figure out what her password was and try to find whichever notebook had all her passwords in the house, that would have been a mess. So those are one of the reasons why I really like to advocate for passwordless. It's like a feature that people are going to think like, I don't know, this seems so complicated. But not to be like doing shameless promo, but Auth0 makes it really easy to implement this. Yeah. So it's always nice working for a company that builds a product that is actually really useful and actually like serves to make people's jobs easier, because passwordless is such a great feature to have. But if you try to think about how to implement that on your own, it sounds so complex. That's when it actually sounds complex, but Auth0 does make that a lot easier. So yeah.
I love it. Not to talk about a sad thing, but my dad passed away a few years ago, and we went we opened up his computer, and there was a password sheet. it was wild times. And then we found copies of this password sheet all over the house. Ooh. And I was just like, this is so scary. I'm like, yes, Ripping these things up. And it was just like, yeah, please don't do that. So I've had a conversation with my mom about like, never do that. Just stop typing your passwords out and printing them. This is not how we do things. So I'll let her know about passwordless as a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so bad. I really wish that like more companies would offer passwordless. Because the amount of times I've been with like great aunts and uncles and my, you know, grandparents and everything, and I'm like, okay, I'm trying to help them log into their bank account or whatever. Uh-huh. And they pull out that notebook with all of their passwords. And I'm just like, if I was a Mm-mm. distrustful person, like I could just have access to everything, you know? And then on top of that, it's also really hard for them to find all the time, because like they have that's the part. They'll have all their passwords there.
I know, I have the sheet somewhere. Yeah.
And then we end up going through like 50 passwords and we get locked out of the account. It's just very silly. It becomes very silly after a while. So that's why. And then also everybody does this. People reuse the same password for everything, which is also not good. Yeah. Anyway, all that to say, passwordless kind of is the wave, you guys. Like, we really should start thinking about that more often, because it's surprisingly like secure. I can't get into the details because I don't have like all the stats in front of me, but it is very secure compared to like, password full.
Password more. Yeah.
Yeah. Password authentication. It's actually much more secure than it normally is with that, just because of all of the like, you're using your passwords and all the kind of stuff that can happen where it can be easily hacked. Passwordless kind of, sidesteps a lot of those like vulnerabilities and things like that.
Yeah. Are there other password tips or best practice type things that you like or use a lot? Share with others?
I mean, I'm like kind of stuck on passwordless because a lot of the other, surprisingly, like password stuff, mm-hmm. it's really annoying.
Yeah.
And I say that because normally I'm an advocate for multi-factor authentication, and kind of in a way passwordless is that. But a lot of times when we think of multi-factor authentication, we're using like an app like Authy or Google Authenticator. Okta has an authentication, like a multi-factor authentication app as well. And those can be great, except for when like you get a new phone or something like that, and now like you lose all your backup codes. And so then when you're trying to log into an application that requires your multi-factor authentication through one of those apps, you're kind of screwed, which has happened to me before. Like, I literally cannot log into Discord because I don't remember what, I don't have like the, that connection between the app and the authentication app. So that is like really annoying, but it also does keep your stuff more secure because I can't get into my Discord account, but neither can the hackers. So I guess
that's no one gets to use my Discord. Yeah.
I guess in a way that's like a good thing. The thing that I like to tell like the non-technical people, is usually I'm really hard on like, do not use those password notebooks. I've made TikToks about this and everything just because like people have a tendency to like think, oh, this is such a great way to keep up with. No, it's not. It's really not. Also, another thing that is I'm looking into the security of it because a lot of people are very confused about how biometrics work. You know, for people who don't know, using your fingerprint, your iris scan or whatever, face scanning, that kind of thing. I think I have to look into the security of all those, but I don't have any qualms against them as is. Most of these things are powered by passkeys, which generally speaking are very secure. Now, I'm probably like boring people by being like passkeys and
no, you're and not
all this,
at
like,
all
technical jargon, but yeah, I think the thing I would say just to answer your question, because I kind of like walked in circles just now, try multi-factor authentication when it makes sense, and try passwordless too, because that can make things a lot easier for you.
I love it. And no, don't apologize for that. You know lots of stuff. I need to know it all. So thank you. I wonder when you're learning all this new stuff, you're working kind of at the cutting edge of all auth things right now. How do you learn something new? What's the process for that like?
So I force myself to give a talk on the subject, literally.
Yes.
That's like the main way that I learn things, because otherwise I'm going to be like, oh, I'll get to it. Like, I'll do it someday. Because for the longest, like, my team has been really big on passwordless and passkeys and that kind of thing. And I've been like, but not really knowing what's going on, honestly. And so that's why I was like, I'm going to actually force myself to learn about this by giving a talk on it. And so that's usually my method when it comes to auth stuff. And my goal is to, like, I always give the same talk multiple times, but I try to improve on it and make it a little bit more technical, add a little bit more details over time. Especially once you give a talk once or twice, you start getting questions, and that forces you to really know your stuff. Because people will ask you questions. I remember I gave a talk last year. This was my Barbie theme talk, which was on the basics of authentication and authorization. So just identity security in general. And someone asked me about passkeys, and I was like, And that's not the position you want to be in. But those things are really good for me as a person who has like really, I have a really hard time with being like motivated on my own, knowing that people are going to ask me questions, knowing that people are going to expect certain answers from me, certain information from me, forces me to like actually know my stuff, do the research. And then also building projects around these things is super, super helpful because it's kind of like I imagine in my head that it's like driving, right? So like there are tons of videos on YouTube that will teach you how to drive, but it's nothing like actually being in the driver's seat. Like you can watch a million of these videos, and then if you go to try to take your driver's test, you're going to fail if you don't actually get that practice. So same goes with like coding. Like you can read conceptually about these things as much as you want to, but like actually building the stuff, actually having to implement it helps so much with knowing like what actually goes on, how these things actually apply when you're doing the work. So I try to do that as well. These two things kind of help me know my stuff reasonably. There's still gaps here and there, but like it definitely helps.
Totally. Having that talk hang over your head in the future feels like that's the only way I'm going to study this to the level that I need to. So I think that's literally great advice for everyone.
literally. And I've started to like pair the two together. So most of my talks now will be based off of a demo. So that forces me to also build a project. So like yesterday I live streamed building this Beyonce website because I'm like, I have to give this talk in 2 weeks. This has to be done by the end of the week. So it's like forcing me to actually like get the work done, which for me is extremely motivating, and it really helps me a lot.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, doing those live streams or talking at a meetup or something, it's like a deadline before the deadline so that you don't hang yourself out to dry. Not that I've done that before and been like, oh no, this is so bad. But yeah, very stressful overall. So something I think that you have done a great job at, among many things, is you've talked about how networking has helped your career, like getting you into jobs that you, like you have this marketing background and networking skills and social media skills. How has that been important and how have you done that? What advice would you give people on that?
That has literally carried me throughout my career. And I suspect that it will continue to do so for however long I stay in the, you know, tech industry. And I have to say this, especially with there being so many layoffs and things like that. The thing that's going to make the difference between you and the million other candidates is the people you know and you build relationships with. And I don't want to frame this in a way that like is very, oh, you're using people and you just want to get something out of them. It's genuinely building relationships. So it's not a one-way street. I'm not always going to people asking them for things. It's genuinely caring about them and wanting to see them progress. And then they reciprocate that. So when I need help, they're there. When they need help, I show up when I can or when it makes sense or when I can offer resources. I do whatever I can to help. And that that helps so much in so many ways. It helps with finding jobs. It helps with getting advice. And it also just makes things genuinely more fulfilling. Like, we are social creatures, you know, and I'm also a very, like, extroverted person anyway. And so because I got started in the tech industry during the pandemic, when there were really no in-person meetups going on, and even now, not post-pandemic, but in a new phase of the pandemic, when things are starting up again, there aren't as many in-person opportunities, especially when we talk about, like, small meetups and organizing like that. Using platforms like Twitter and TikTok and LinkedIn have been invaluable for me because it's allowed me to create a community that's like so much broader than the city that I live in. And so I kind of like, because I had that marketing background, initially I was really just like sharing in public, like just broadly broadcasting the work that I was doing, what I was learning. I didn't really intentionally try to build relationships. It just kind of like happened. Because I think people noticed that I was like trying really hard to learn in public and I was like asking for help with things. I would ask questions all the time because I was confused and learning on my own. So I didn't have like an instructor or a classmate that I could like lean on. So I would just ask the internet. And so I think when people noticed that, they started to be really kind to me. And at first I was like, what's going on? Like, what's happening? Like, you're always told that like the internet is so toxic. In a lot of ways it is, but there are also some really great people there. Yeah. And so when you find the good people, you stick by them, you know? And then what happens is like, because they're kind to you, of course you want to reciprocate that. So when they share things, I reshare and I, you know, cheer them on and all those kind of things. There are so many people that, now that I've been able to go to conferences as part of my job, I've met up with and we've talked and known each other for like years now at this point. And I get to support them when they give talks and they get to support me. And it's a really, really great feeling. And like I said, I think it really makes being in the tech industry feel so much more fulfilling because there's a lot of craziness that happens here, especially when you are of an underrepresented minority. Like, yeah, it can feel very lonely and things can get tough. But having that like community by your side has been so helpful. Like, there have been times when I'm like, you guys, what should I ask for as far as you know, salary negotiation goes and stuff like that, and they've been like so helpful. So yeah, the thing I would recommend for people is just to genuinely pursue relationship building. And it doesn't have to be anything too intense. Like, you don't have to like be, you know, badgering people in their DMs, but like share publicly and then support other people, and people will reciprocate. People will see that like you're putting in the work and you're putting in the effort, and that you're also trying hard to build those relationships and build that community. Because surprisingly, like, or maybe not surprisingly, but like in the tech industry, a lot of people are lacking that community value, and a lot of people are lacking like the soft skills that usually come along with that. And so that really makes you stand out. So it helps you and in the community in more than one way. So yeah.
Yeah, and I think you're so genuine about all of your interactions too. I know sometimes people think of networking as this like sketchy sales guy type vibe that that's not it. Like, I think you've done such an amazing job of supporting other people. And yeah, I'm so glad that that's created a nice community for you too. That is very obvious. That's really cool. Yeah.
It's really nice. And like, honestly, I don't, like, half the time, I'm not even, like, trying to get things out of, like, not half the time, most of the time, I'm not, like, trying to get anything out of anybody. Yeah. It's just genuinely caring about someone, and it's really that simple. Being interested in what people are working on, where they have worked, what has gotten them this far in their career, all that kind of stuff. It, like, goes so far to the point where you don't really need to be looking to get anything out of people. Like, they'll willingly give to you, you know? So I really, and I'm also just not, like, I'm not very good at faking. I don't have a poker face. I'm not a good liar or anything. So I can't like be like, if I try to like go to somebody with ulterior motives, I would be like, hi, and be so obvious with it that it would like ruin everything. So I can't do anything if not genuinely and authentically anyway. So yeah.
Totally. Even if you tried, you couldn't do it. Yeah.
I would fail. I would not have gotten this far if I was faking it, y'all. Like, it would not work.
That's amazing. I think the question or the comment you made about asking about salary things and negotiation there too, that's something that people I feel like struggle to talk about with other people. And that's really good intel that you can get about like, what are people charging? What are people getting for their salary? Like for me, that's been like, I've asked a few people and I'm like, oh, I'm really undercutting myself. And like, that's life-changing information that you can just ask. Maybe they won't always tell you, but oftentimes they do.
Yeah, I usually, I remember one time this was the first keynote talk that I gave, and they were like, okay, name your price. And I was like, what? Like, I was totally unprepared for that. Like, what's going on? And so I like quickly sent out a tweet in panic, like, hey, does anyone have any insights around this? And like, can DM me and we can have a conversation. And literally, I think that the prices that people told me were like 10 times what I was going to ask for, literally. Yeah. Like, I was going to so deeply undercharge. Like, and the same thing happens with salary negotiation. And again, these are topics that people don't really want to talk about. And understandably so. Like, I get that a lot of people want to keep like money matters private and everything like that, but it's totally worth asking about those things, because I know for myself, like, money was not talked about growing up. I didn't grow up with a lot of money. So my standards of like what the value for my work is are like much lower than what they probably should be. So getting like a second, third, and fourth opinion has been so, so, so incredibly helpful. And the thing is, like, you'll hear the numbers that people ask for and you're like, Lord, I could never. And then you shoot your shot and they're like, okay, fine. That's the craziest part, is when they're like, oh yeah, we can totally do that. And you're like, whoa, this is so amazing and scary, and what's going on? Definitely, like, I'll ask questions about salary. I've asked about like how to handle managerial changes, organizational changes, all that kind of stuff, how to handle interviewing, everything. I'll ask about anything. Because a lot of times other people are asking the same questions they might be, or thinking the same questions I might be too scared to ask. So if I put it out there, it'll help them as well. And it helps me a lot, because I'm not coming from a background where like people know these things or teach these things. My parents didn't like, you know, really have careers like this. So it's not like a norm for me. And I think that's how it is for a lot of people, honestly. So I don't know. And it's like, I don't want to keep not knowing. It's really important for me to like, to progress in my career, to know some of these things that come with navigating in the tech industry. And so I ask, and I think everybody should, and it is scary, but you learn so much from doing that. And it definitely, definitely makes a huge difference.
Yeah. That's such good advice. You learn so much, and you're also like, it saves you so much time, because if you set your salary at a certain level, then that's with you for as long as you're at that job, which could be a long time. So
yeah.
I love that. What other questions should I ask this wealth of information? I wanted to ask a little bit about, so you tweet and talk quite a bit about self-care, mental health. Mm-hmm. I think it's amazing that you do, because it is so helpful to so many people. To the degree that you want to talk about it, how and why did you start to talk about those things more publicly?
Well, for the longest, I struggled with mental health and didn't know that I was struggling. I just thought I was crazy. I just thought there was like something deeply wrong with me. Because people don't talk about it. So I didn't really know what was showing up. So earlier when I talked about how I got to the job I'm at now, I did mention a few times that I was unknowingly navigating my career with like deep depression and just didn't know. And so that kind of made me feel super isolated. And again, I didn't know what was going on. I just thought it was something wrong with me. Maybe I don't belong here. Maybe I like shouldn't have even tried to get into the tech industry. Like I was thinking all these things. And I had no answers for them and I didn't know where to turn to. It just so happened that I had gone through some really rough things in 2022. And I had, at my current job, my first manager at AuthZero, I was telling him some of the things that were going on. And I was just like, but it's fine. Like, I think I'll be able to deal with, I think I should be okay. Just because that's what your default is. Like, I'll figure it out. And he kind of was like, I think you should try talking to a therapist. And now when I heard that, I was like, what? Because I come from a background where therapy, seeing a psychiatrist, all those things are super taboo. It's like, oh, I'm not crazy. I don't know why you're telling me to do that. But I took his advice because I'm the kind of person where if someone I trust gives me advice, I'm at least going to consider it. Because I know how far it's gotten me in my career and just life in general. So I decided to see a therapist. And that kind of started me on my journey of getting like several diagnoses. So I was diagnosed with depression, which I since have pretty much stabilized. I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, PTSD, and also ADHD. So what happens a lot of times with these like illnesses is that they kind of feed into each other. So when one is kind of flaring up, the rest of them kind of start to go a little bit crazy too. And so, again, like I said, I feel like I felt so alone when I knew all these, when I was learning all this stuff about myself and I didn't know what to do. And you, sometimes on social media, you give a very one-sided view of yourself. Everything looks good. People share the promotions. They share when, you know, they give their first talk and all these kind of great things. And I think we should still share those things. But I kept thinking to myself as I would see people like talk about these things, like, I don't belong here. Like, I'm dealing with all this stuff and nobody else is dealing with it. Like, I shouldn't be here. And so once I started to get treatment and I took medical leave and everything, when I came back, I was like determined to like share as much as I felt was like good to share with the community because, you know, this shouldn't be our best kept secret. I have a talk where I talk about the power of community, where I discuss like how I went through that depression. And the thing that got me through was the community that I had built. And so, you know, with the pandemic and everything, and then people go through so much that we just don't even know about, childhood, otherwise, so much happens that everybody pretty much is dealing with something when it comes to mental health. And I think it should be normalized now. I don't think that you should, you know, sacrifice your privacy, but it doesn't hurt to let people know. Like I've tweeted before, like, hey, if you guys have any tips for dealing with ADHD, let me know. I'm taking a break cause I'm having a rough patch with PTSD. Like I'll let people know these things. Because I like to, like I said, I like to show up authentically when I'm doing my work and my content. And so that is a part of who I am. And if people want to look at the work that I'm doing and follow along what I'm doing, that's a big part of it too. And I hope that people see it and feel a little less alone if they're dealing with the same thing, or if in the future they deal with similar things, they can kind of, you know that other people have too. So that's kind of my thought process. Cause I'm always like, when I was at my lowest, I wish that someone had shared these things. And so I kind of think about what me in the past needed and try to like provide those things when I can.
Totally. Well, I think that's amazing that you have, and countless people have been helped by that, I'm sure, because
I hope so.
There's such a taboo against speaking about it, especially for like in a work type setting, but everything in your mental health is what your work and quality of work rests on, right?
Yeah.
So like you can't do your best anything if you're struggling like that. So
yeah, and the two are intertwined. Like I can't like leave that at home when I show up at work, you know. So
yeah.
I feel like figure it's worth sharing when it makes sense. Of course, like, you know, keep track of your privacy and protect all that as well, but yeah.
And having that puts you kind of in control of that too, like what you want to speak about, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So your manager kind of talked about the idea of therapy with you, and that seems like a big deal, a big catalyst for getting some help. How do you think you What would you recommend to managers or people who are leading teams to support the mental health of their workers?
That's a really, really good question. I think first and foremost is being like a listening ear in a safe space, like really establishing that it is safe for your people you manage to like talk to you about what they're going through. And then accommodating when you can and making the best suggestions when you can. So like my manager was the person who told me to pursue therapy. My manager was the person who told me to pursue medical leave because I really needed it at the time. And those are things that I never would have thought of myself. And so having that support was like invaluable. And I think that like managers need to open up that it's a safe space for them to their, you know, people they manage to talk about those things, and also know like what accommodations does the company you work for offer so that you can offer those as options for the people you manage. Another thing is to also make sure that as a manager, you take care of yourself. So managers are carrying a lot of weight. They have to manage all kinds of like responsibilities and answer to like higher ups and stuff. And they also have to carry the burden sometimes of what their employees are going through. So you have to like make sure you pour into yourself. And that was one of the reasons why I trusted my manager, because my manager also takes care of his mental health and kept track of all of those things. So it made me feel more comfortable doing so, because the last thing I would want to do, and I feel like a lot of people are like this, is burden somebody who's not getting refilled in any way. So make sure to like also prioritize those things. And when you feel comfortable, open up about those things with your employees as well, because there's nothing like being able to relate to somebody. If you know someone, if you know your manager is neurodivergent and you are too, that's like a great thing that makes you feel so much more comfortable. If you know your manager has dealt with any kind of mental health thing, you feel so much more comfortable sharing your own like situations. And that doesn't mean you have to like trauma dump and like, you know, put all your business out there or anything like that. But like, again, to the degree that you feel comfortable with, like it can be really, really helpful. So like being relatable and making sure that it's a safe space and making sure to take care of yourself too are really things that for me like made a huge difference in me feeling comfortable with my manager.
Yeah, I love that. I think there's, yeah, we have to talk about this stuff because it doesn't do any good to you as a person or your team to just lock it all in your body. Yeah. That's what I tend to do. Just like lock it in there somewhere and not let it out. And letting it out feels better. Yeah.
I can't hold it in if I wanted to. This is why I say I can't help but be like an authentic, like genuine person.
Yeah.
It's not really that I'm trying to be authentic. I don't know how to be any other way. So I like have to like kind of like the emotions will just start overflowing after a while. But I definitely feel more comfortable letting that overflow happen sometimes if someone else is also willing to share in return. So yeah,
totally. That's so funny. An introvert and an extrovert talking on this podcast today, just dealing with stuff in their own way. That's so funny. So is there anything that you're excited about tech wise or otherwise that you might want to recommend or things you're looking into at the moment?
Anything I'm excited about? Well, I am excited about my Beyonce talk. Yeah. I'm very excited about that. I'm excited to see how my little application goes. And I'm also excited because this is going to be one of the first projects I've built that will be very design heavy, because I'm not a designer by any means. But I'm going to try to like work on my design chops with this project as well. Yeah. I'm also excited about like kind of figuring out what I try to choose something new every year to like learn. So last year I got really into Next.js, and I'm thinking this year it's either going to be Python or TypeScript. Those are the two that I'm kind of choosing between, but I'm excited about like getting into that. I'm also really excited about creating more content on TikTok and live streaming.
Yeah.
Because surprisingly I really enjoy doing both, which I thought I would hate, so I'm excited to see how far I can go with both platforms.
That's fun when you start liking something you thought you'd hate. How cool. How has TikTok been for you as a creator?
So it's been very interesting. It's been surprisingly positive. I thought like people were going to be like dogging me in my comments, but people have been really nice.
Yeah.
There's a nice little group of tech content creators who are there who are really supportive of each other, which I really like. Cool. I still don't really understand how the TikTok algorithm works, but it is a great place to like educate in a way that's like authentic and genuine. And also, if you have any technical like information you want to share with people who are non-technical, like, it's a great platform for that as well. So like I said earlier, I've shared a lot of identity security tips there for everyone, not just technical people. Yeah. So it's a great place for stuff like that. So far, so good.
I like it. Well, how cool. I will link to all of those good things in the notes, but is there anything you want to promote? Shout out. I know the Beyonce talk is coming, so everyone will love that when it starts touring around the circuit.
As of right now, there's nothing else that's like coming to cool. mind.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much, Ciara. I think you're incredible. I'm like an old woman, but I look up to you so much. And I think you're so cool. And I'm glad we had the time to talk today. And follow her on all the places. And we will see you next time on the Last Tech Podcast. Thanks, Ciara.
See ya.
The Last Tech Podcast.